Hi, welcome to the show. How about you guys introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Callan Shaw. I'm the lead developer of The Unallied, and I founded the company about 5 years ago.
Hi, I'm Jacob. I'm community manager for The Unallied. I also run Gaming in Public, which is a group in DC that helps support indie game developers around the world.
And what game are you guys working on right now?
Well, right now we are working on a Kickstarter for Super Dwarf Madness. It's a sequel to our Xbox game Dwarf Madness. It's a great game where, you know, you collect gold to buy yourself a lot of guns so that you can kill the zombies that kicked your dwarf brethren out of their homeland.
And, you know, for the listeners out there, how can they find this Kickstarter campaign? What can they do?
Well, if you go to Kickstarter.com, you can just search for Super Dwarf Madness. You know, it's going to be Super Dwarf, D-W-A-R-F, Madness, M-A-D-N-E-S-S. And you can also find the link right on our homepage at TheUnallied.com, which is TheUnallied.com.
Great. And, okay, so you've been doing indie games for 5 years. You know, in the pre-interview, we discussed the fact that you were doing it solo initially, and then you kind of recently decided to kind of have a small team. Can you talk about what was the decision behind, you know, going solo for so many years and then finally deciding to have a team?
Actually, I was the one who got in touch with Callan because he was making games on his own for 5 years, and I said, oh my god, your games are so good. Like, 3D Destruction is probably my favorite game that Callan does. Which is like a 3D, which is a 3D game where you put on red-blue glasses for even like a regular TV, and also works on 3D TV. And it's like a puzzle game like Breakout, but the balls move inward and they come out of the screen at you.
Okay.
And also my other favorite game that he does is Drink Cards. And Drink Cards is great because it's like playing like a card game, but it's based off Xbox Live Indie Market, and it's great to play. You can play with up to 30 people at one time. So.
And. Yeah, what would you say was your favorite game from before you started the collaboration with a smaller team?
Well, Dwarf Madness is probably the first one we really collaborated on to any extent, and that was still mostly my own doing. I mean, we didn't have an artist back then, so the graphics are just things I put together. Of all my previous games, a few of them I've had some help on from other friends back in Pittsburgh. Like, I have Drink Cards Beer Pong. It's a successor to the drinking game Jacob was talking about, and it's pretty much just a 3D beer pong simulator that you can play online, play with up to 4 people. It has some really cool graphics that a friend of mine back in Pittsburgh did just sort of in his free time, and it turned out really well. I like that game a lot.
Now, you've released several games independently, and obviously some have probably been a bigger hit than others. Can you identify, could you predict which ones would be hits? I mean, that's one question. And then if you could, what do you think was the feeling beforehand that made you say that, you know what, this is going to turn out pretty well in the marketplace?
Well, at first I definitely, you know, didn't know what was going to be a hit with people, and after the first couple years, you know, when Drink Cards had been out, that was it. In a lot of ways, it's still my most successful game, Drink Cards. And after that, you know, I did Drink Cards Beer Pong, and I even did a Flip Cup by Drink Cards game, which was a little bit smaller scale, but still really fun. They've all done pretty predictably well. I mean, it's not like the biggest hit because it is a niche kind of marketing to people who want to play a drinking game on Xbox, but
yeah.
They do consistently a lot better than games that I think would be more appealing to people, but for some reason just don't get the exposure and stuff.
And the funniest thing is, like, when I first met Callan,
yeah.
The funny thing is when I first met Callan is that I went through his whole library of games, and I said, oh, 3D Destruction has to be your best game. This is, like, the most fun area. He goes, no. Drinking games is where I make the most of my revenue. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, there's very little competition in the drinking game on Xbox Live Indie Market. So that's where his niche is, and that's where he's been able to have a career so far on Xbox Live Indie Market.
It's even funny, because we did IndieCon DC, and we did Boston Fig. And at both of those conventions, we'll get people to play 3D Destruction, they throw on the glasses, and they're just like, whoa, it pops out at me, it's so great. it just, I think it doesn't translate to sales because it's a stereoscopic game,
yeah.
And people with 3D TVs, they might be trying to play, like, you know, AAA titles with it, and other people aren't going to put in the investment to, like, get the pair of glasses.
Yeah.
It's not so much an investment as it is just work.
Yeah, it's a friction point. But I think it also
yeah.
brings up another good point, which is that, you know, the drinking game seems more of a broader casual audience versus, you know, some of the more hardcore type of games or I don't know. And so the question is as an indie, do you need to be cognizant of what's going to work in the market? You know, what's going to have the broadest appeal while also staying true to maybe the core mechanics or gameplay that you want? Or do you feel that there should be no compromise whatsoever? Or?
I'm not one of those people that sort of says, I have a vision and I'm going to stick to it to the very end, even if it's a bitter end. I think, especially, this is what Xbox Indie Games taught me more than anything, is that there's so much competition out there. You're on a new releases list for maybe a few days, and if you don't get noticed then, you sort of just fade into obscurity. So I try to not make things that are like, you know, like a big hit on indie games was like Minecraft clones.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do things that were original, but would also reach a lot of people.
Okay. And, you know, you talk about being original.
And yeah, the drinking game scene on, yeah.
Oh yeah, go. No, finish up what you're going to say about the drinking game.
Well, pretty much I think since I released Drink Cards in 2009, I've really never seen a better drinking game on Xbox Indie Games. So I'm really happy I sort of got on that market because it was
yeah.
like the time in college where I was about a junior, senior in college, and it was the best time to make a drinking game personally.
Yeah. So part of it is just what's going on in your life too, maybe as,
yeah.
as input. And... Okay, so that's amazing. with drinking games, have there been other drinking games then, since then on Xbox? Or?
Yeah, there's a lot of drinking games on Xbox. Like I was saying, I'm really proud of Beer Pong because it's a full 3D thing. There's definitely, that's probably technically the best drinking game on Xbox by a long shot. But there are other like 2D Beer Pong games and some slot machine type drinking games. I just feel like they're all very... they're very passive in making you drink, whereas Drink Cards was a game where, you know, it makes you drink passively, but then there's a very active mini-game component that everyone's competing on, and it gets harder as the game progresses and as you get more drunk. So it's really fun to see at the end of the game people being like, ah, no, I just barely lost your score.
What's interesting is that, so you had this idea for a drinking game when you were in college, and what inspired you to go from idea to actually getting it done? Because, you know, a lot of maybe students might say, okay, well, that's a funny idea, and then discard it.
Well, it was actually my third Xbox game. So
awesome.
I originally, when the channel first was announced and, like, when I first was getting into XNA, I was making a game. I ended up calling it Oh Snap. It was sort of a Lumines clone, if you know that game from the PSP, and I think it was on other platforms since then. And... randomly, while I was about to release that, I released a snake clone that I called Garrett the Slug. And it turned out Garrett the Slug way outperformed the other game I had worked for months and months on, and had actually collaborated with some of my friends to make. So I was just like, huh, maybe this marketplace isn't like a traditional gaming audience, and I should try something weird. And I was really into drinking games at the time, and I was like, I think this would be really fun.
Okay. And what did you feel when a game, what did you learn, I guess, when you saw that a game that you spent so much time on and you worked on with a larger team didn't perform as well as something simple and potentially silly?
Well, I learned that what a lot of people say, that, you know, half of everything's luck, is definitely true.
Or it could,
you can make something that people enjoy, but
yeah.
it's just not, it's not the right thing to the people you're selling it to at the right time.
Yeah. And it might be the theme also, to be fair, right? Like, if
yeah, someone once said puzzle games are no good for Xbox indie games. I kind of take that to heart now, because 3D Struction didn't do well, this other game didn't do well. My puzzle games are probably some of my worst performers.
Well, I think when people hear drinking game, they can just relate right away, right? Like, if you don't, but then you definitely have games like Minecraft. I don't think Minecraft had a had a theme that was necessarily maybe it was attractive. I mean, I don't know. I guess that's the mystique of indie success is maybe you do know or you don't know what's going to happen. But going back to the original question, you mentioned that you like to do stuff that's unique. I mean, what's your process then for finding stuff that you feel can be unique? And is the uniqueness in terms of theme or is it in terms of gameplay or what?
It's definitely, for me, more in terms of gameplay than theme. I get inspired by sort of other media around me. Like, what I'm currently enjoying in life, if it's not a video game, I try and think about, well, what if it was a video game?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where Drink Cards came from. With 3Destruction, I think I had just recently seen Avatar in theaters for the first time. It blew me away, and I was just like, I started looking up stereoscopy online, and I found it was a pretty simple process, and I wanted to see if I could recreate it in the game. I like playing with this sort of new technical things that other people haven't thought to play with yet.
So it's kind of like a musician in the sense that sometimes musicians will talk about or write lyrics or songs about stuff that's going on in their life. And in the same way, that's kind of the approach you're using with your games.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment.
And then what inspired the Dwarf series of games then?
Well, Dwarf Madness, it was based off of one of my other earlier games. The earlier game was called Snowball Showdown. It was an exclusively multiplayer shooter, and I got some reviews for it, but it never took off because Xbox games that rely on Xbox Live to succeed just don't. And everyone who played it said it had a really good engine behind it. So I wanted to reuse that engine for another top-down shooter. But I thought, instead of focusing on online play, I'll focus on local play. And I also wanted to make a game where it was sort of action-based, but your main mechanic was sort of collecting things that would help you get stronger. And that's where we got the gold coins that you would then buy things with to get stronger guns and enchanted items.
You know, since you started 5 years ago, the game development marketplace and scene has changed significantly. And it sounds like you've stuck to Xbox Live. And the question is, did you look at some of these other emerging platforms that kind of popped up during that time? Did you consider other techniques? Did you also experiment with marketing? Was that something that you also explored, or did you rely on the marketplace for exposure, the Xbox Live marketplace?
Well, when I first started, it was mostly because I was familiar with the programming language, which is C#, and I had been working in that for about 3 or 4 years prior, and I was like, oh, great, something I can, you know, not have to learn a new language for. And as time went on, it was definitely a way for me to sort of cut my teeth on indie dev as like a business, where I would do some marketing, maybe take out some Google AdWords, try to do a Facebook campaign, try to just get Facebook followers and post updates, just really try and learn how communities are built behind these indie games. And now that I've sort of, you know, learned a lot of that, the Xbox platform is starting to become less important for my marketing. I think I'm to the point now where I'm going to get more external exposure than from within that marketplace.
And how do you keep up with the marketing? I mean, do you have a Facebook page? Do you have like an email list? Do you send video updates or prototype updates to your fans, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we have our Twitter page, and we just actually launched our Facebook page for the Unallied. We also do have videos. It's really hard now with Xbox Live Indie Games to get people to do videos, because a lot of the people who are on YouTube who do videos have essentially given up on Xbox Live Indie Games.
Yeah.
So you either have to be on PC, or you gotta be on, like, physical Xbox, like, not as in Xbox Live Indie Games.
Like the arcade,
or you have to be on PSN, you know. So it's been really hard for us, but we are working on having a Dwarf Madness demo out for the Kickstarter soon, so people who don't have Xbox can get a chance to play the game, so they can experience all the dwarves, guns, and zombies. They get the kill. So it's really exciting for us, and I think for us to have a very successful Kickstarter campaign, it's very important for us to have a demo so people who don't have a 360 can play it on PC.
Yeah. And your new game, is it just going to be targeted on Mac and PC, or what platforms are you targeting exactly? Which is super.
Well, it's sort of, yeah, we're going to try and build it in Unity or a platform like that. So we really want to be able to take it to any platform that we can get onto. We're definitely going to target PC, Mac, Linux first, because that's going to be the easiest to build for, the most direct way to reach our fans. But if we can see, you know, a groundswell of support, we'll definitely try for, you know, the PS4 marketplace, which I hear is going to be really indie-friendly. Even Xbox One is getting more indie-friendly. And we just heard that Wii U is now supporting Monogame, which is a spiritual successor to XNA. So that might also be possible.
I think what's also interesting is that you've been in indie games long enough where you're now seeing a new transition, where initially you were on Xbox and now you're looking for new platforms. How does that feel? And did anything like suddenly jump out at you and say, wow, there's going to be a huge shift? Now, if you use Unity, yes, you can probably still use C#. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I really think it's only gotten easier. When XNA first was announced, it was sort of remarkable that Microsoft was going to open up their platform like this, because Microsoft's historically a pretty closed-off company.
Yeah.
And back then, if you wanted to release on Wii or PS3, you would need to spend a few $1,000s on a dev kit, and even then they might not want to give you one or deal with you at all.
Yeah.
But now it's become a sort of like, oh, you're an indie developer, like, let's see what you got. They're really much more accepting.
And what about business models? You know, since you started, there's
like, as a developer, they're fighting each other to get your game on their platform rather than you have to fight them to get on their platform.
Yeah, which was the case where you had to spend maybe tens of thousands of dollars just on a dev kit before.
Exactly.
Versus now. I mean, the other question, though, is what about changes in business models? So when it first came out, you know, maybe games were 40, 50, or whatever, you know, quite a bit more. Now we've seen that prices have gone down. The types of monetizations have also changed, such as in-app purchases and stuff like that. Have you kept up with that? Have you?
I mean,
yeah.
It's been good and bad. I mean, a lot of people, that's why it's really hard to get on mobile. So with mobile, especially if you're on Android, a lot of people expect it to be free. So you have to do a lot of in-app purchases with Android.
Yeah.
With Apple, it's getting featured. So the problem with Apple is, like, you just hope and pray that Apple will feature you on the and that you get up to number one. But I mean, the good thing with mobile comparatively to, like, console or even PC and Mac is that if you're, like, in the top 1,000, that you make a very good money. The thing is, if you're on PC and Mac, if you're in top 100, you make money.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the good thing about Steam now, you know, as they're doing machines now, they're going to, and the cool thing is that we're essentially building a console game for PC and Mac. So, like, you can plug in an Xbox 360 controller, you can play it, like, you can play with a keyboard and mouse with Super Dwarf Madness, and also with Dwarf Madness out right now, like, with a PC demo that's about to come out. But the problem, I mean, the good thing moving forward is that PC is looking more like a console, which is better for us.
Okay. What are your thoughts on Steam as a distribution platform? Do you feel that's going to fade away soon or not? Now that you have, like, the Windows 8 App Store or something like that.
I think it's great that the operating system makers themselves are starting to open up these stores to get content more quickly to their users, but Steam is really just a powerhouse right now in the industry. They're like the Xbox Live of computers, so...
Okay.
All the content's on there, and it's just really, they're doing really well right now, I think.
And
it's going to be viable for at least a few years.
And when do you expect to have your game released?
Super Dwarf Madness is currently slated for an October 2014 release. That's obviously an estimate depending on what our Kickstarter makes.
And you're building off, what do you feel is going to take the longest part? Because it's about a year from now. what's going to be the longest part of developing this game?
Well, since this is the first game we've done with a dedicated artist, I'm not sure how long it'll take to integrate his artwork into the gameplay, but I assume we're going to get into a flow with that pretty quickly. Moving to Unity might be a little bit of a challenge. I think that's going to be the longest period of time where I have to just keep building things and I can't iterate. I'm going to have to just move a lot of the code base directly over and change a bunch. But once we get there, it's just we're going to keep adding features, keep adding polish. Polishing games is really over half the time.
Yeah. And what other surprises have you had now that you're working in a team versus working individually? So now you're in a team of a group of three, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, for us, it's great because we get to bounce ideas off each other.
Sure.
So Callum will throw out an idea, and then me and Francis might say, oh, maybe that might not work. And then Francis might have an idea that we're like, oh, we all like. We all work together to come up with a better game, per se. And when you make games by yourself, it's sometimes going to be hard because you're just bouncing ideas off yourself and maybe off the internet. But it's good to have a personal touch to it, where you're physically talking to the person, seeing them in person, and they're trying out maybe you have a new game mode, maybe you have more enemies in the game. But it's just finding that right balance. But it's better having other people bounce those ideas off of.
It's great to get the different perspectives.
Do you guys meet in person then, or is it over Skype or Google Hangouts, or what's the strategy then? And how often do you meet?
We do a lot of each. We'll probably do a Google Hangout at least once a week. And because of Jacob's meetup group, we'll see each other in person about twice a month. So we get a lot of FaceTime with each other, and we're emailing each other every day.
Okay.
So we really keep in pretty good contact, despite all living in sort of different sections of the DC area.
And I guess you as a developer, do you feel more energy now that you're working in a team, or is there more of a trade-off because you're getting, different inputs, different perspectives? Or?
It's definitely a little bit of both. I mean, it's so fulfilling to actually be able to show something in development to people and have them say, well, since I'm part of this, I have these opinions, as opposed to if I would show my girlfriend or my friends, and they'll just be like, okay, that's nice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a lot more, I gotta do things to, sort of implement the ideas they have. So there's a lot more back and forth on each little thing of the game, and it's a little bit more work, but we get a lot more out of it in the end.
Yeah, I think maybe it is that ownership perspective that actually gets you more feedback. Because, as you said, if you show it to someone else who's just a tester or someone who's just a friend, they may not give you the really detailed feedback you need. I don't know. Maybe you have. Maybe you've gotten exceptional feedback. But
no, that's generally pretty true. And that's why we're really excited to put the demo out on Kickstarter, so that our backers who have maybe never even played the game before can get a taste of it and tell us what they like, what they don't like, what would maybe be a sticking point for them to back it.
Yeah, so let's talk about then the marketing strategy that you're using for this game. Obviously, Kickstarter is one venue. Do you have a dedicated fan group already that you're keeping in contact with? In addition to emailing your team, maybe you're emailing them about stuff or showing them stuff?
Yeah, the cool thing is that we have such a fan base with drink cards and with beer pong, and so we're connecting them to our Kickstarter. We also did an outreach at Boston Fig, which was about a month ago, and where we got to show the game, people got to tell us feedback on how to make it better, we got quotes for the game, and also we got to show it at Indie Game Collective, which is a group of indie game developers. Deja Bond Games is there, Alchemy Labs is there, Pop Cannibal Games, which is produced by Adult Swim, is there. 82 Apps is there too as well. But it's a lot of indies in one space, and they work together to help each other on their games. But also, we got to show the game there to specifically to developers who give good feedback rather than just saying, oh, this is good or this is bad. They literally told us, this is bad, and this is why I think this is bad, and this is how you can change it.
Yeah, they can describe what they like and don't like better than the average gamer might.
And Jacob mentioned that he organizes some kind of group to help indie developers. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So I don't really have very many programming skills, and I don't do art and music. So my way of giving back to the community was I founded Gaming in Public. And Gaming in Public is a meetup group where we meet. Every other Wednesday we get beer. But then once a month we usually do an event with a developer. And so we do an event with a developer via Skype. They might have a Kickstarter, they might be established, but we talk with them about the game, and they give us game codes, and we play the game at the bar. But it's, like, a lot of fun, it's more casual, and it's a good way to...
One second.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And what in... you know, how has that been?
It's been really good. We started... I started in 2011 with no idea of how it was going to turn out and how I even get developers to do events with me. But the way my first event was with Chris Steele, who did games on Xbox Live Indie Market.
Sure.
And that really launched my indie gaming events. And we've done events with Crankshaft Games, with Flay Entertainment, who do Mark the Ninja, they do Don't Starve. We did events with Rami Smalley, who does Super Creek Box. We've also done events with Kickstarters right during their Kickstarter. We did one, so Crankshaft Games did Party Sin, and their goal was to raise $9,000, and they reached about $16,000, and their game is on Steam right now, so.
Okay. And, you know, since you've seen a variety of the indie scene out there, what do you feel about the indie scene? And what do you characterize as the indie scene? Because I feel like there are a lot of independent developers now in gaming. You know, it seems like even the conferences are catering to independent game developers. But there's a huge difference between what the indie game scene is, which seems to be more like hardcore type games, but are unique and novel, versus indie in the sense that, okay, these people are doing games for health, these people are doing games for kids, these people are doing social games, these people are doing, you know, novel mobile games. What's your definition of what's considered indie?
I'm going to say that it's really hard to define what a specific indie is, because if you look at Clay Entertainment, Clay Entertainment has a staff of 30 people, and they work on 2 to 3 games at a time.
Yeah.
But I would still consider them indie, because if they don't make money on a project, they're out. They can't. They're done. Their company's done. And there are a lot of companies that are like that. And just because you have a team of 3 people or a team of 30 people, that doesn't mean you're not indie. I mean, I was once, my favorite story is once I was at MAGFest, Music and Game Festival, and I was at a panel with For Access, you know, who do XCOM. And the guys who did XCOM said that we were indie. And I kind of laughed at that, because they have a marketing budget. They're on TV commercials. Like, how can you call yourself, like, an indie game studio? But they're like, if you looked at our numbers, you would totally see that we're totally indie. And it's like, no, like, people buy, like, when a new Civilization comes out, people go out of their way to buy it. People go out of their way to buy XCOM. XCOM was a success, so.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on business models for indies? Do you promote the in-app purchase perspective? Because I mean, I've been seeing this in the games industry where indie isn't necessarily even a gameplay or a perspective. It's almost an adoption of a certain business model. And you talk about XCOM, you talk about some of these companies where if their next game flops, that's it. Right, and that's what's considered indie. Whereas these other game companies that are different, unique, novel, you know, they could be considered indie, but because they're making so much cash, no one really considers them indie. And I think of like something like Clash of Clans, which I don't know if you've heard of Clash of Clans on, they're on iPad and iPhone, but they're doing they're making several million a day. But technically, they're just as small as some of these other studios.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy out there. I mean, I think as much as
concepts that have sort of never been done before. I'd say now it's also maybe trying new business models that have never been done before, different ways to monetize a game, different ways to market a game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff going on with indies, and I kind of feel like, for me, that's my definition of indie, is just someone who's not following the traditional AAA model, doesn't have, like, huge backing, and, like, is just trying to do something new and unique, and they think it'll succeed because it's new and unique.
Okay. So Angry Birds, Angry Birds itself would be considered an indie game until, obviously, it reached mass success.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, once you're in a pistachio commercial, maybe you're not indie anymore.
So where do you see the future of indie game development going?
I personally kind of think indies are more or less going to take over the industry. Not completely, because there's always going to be a place for games that have multi-million dollar budgets and really bring, like, the spectacle. But I think a lot of people that maybe never even knew that there was a difference between an indie game and another game are getting into indie games and not even realizing it. And I think it's a good time.
I think as long as no one in the games industry owns the primary distribution mechanisms, that might be true. I mean, I think part of the reason why indie has become more mainstream is because you had this fracture of distribution where basically before it might have been in the store, or even on the consoles, right? As distribution became primarily over the internet, and primarily maybe even over mobile and app stores and stuff like that, where the vested interests don't necessarily care about grabbing 60 or 80% because that's really not how they're making their revenue. When I say 60-80%, I mean 68-80% of their developers' revenue, or the overall cut, because they're making their money selling games. They don't really care. And because of that, it seems that that's why indies have proliferated to an extent.
I would agree with that. Because if you look at 5 years ago when Xbox indie games started, the only places, you really got games, like on a console, it would be PlayStation at PSN, which was still kind of new back then. Xbox had the arcade. Wii almost had nothing back then.
Yeah.
And it's just, there are so few channels to get content from, and now Apple's in it, Google's in it, everybody's trying to get in it, and a lot of them aren't really gaming companies, so they're happy to just let whatever games we want to make on it, while also supporting lots of types of programs, content.
So as long as no one in the games industry finds a way to choke distribution again,
Yeah, I don't know how that could even happen.
I was just thinking about that right now. I'm like, well, how can that even happen? But you never know, because you think about the movies industry, right? The movie industry and the music industry. There was a way, obviously there was still, for a long time, the big studios controlled the distribution. From what I understand, I don't know the music industry that deeply, but from what I hear,
it's arguably still a lot like that.
Yeah, but I think...
I wonder if it's just because they had longer to sort of establish themselves as a market leader, and whereas gaming, it's only been around maybe 30, 40 years max.
That could be.
So they sort... Yeah, maybe they got too big too early, and then, once people realized how much money there was to be made, everyone jumped in on it, and now you can go anywhere to sell your game.
Yeah. So that's one concern I have. But I mean, you're right. Until that happens, until someone finds a way to control, and there are definitely mechanics of the physical. When you talk about distribution, even the theaters and all this other stuff. I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure in the physical element that made kind of other types of distribution cost prohibitive. But now with digital distribution and some of these other techniques, I think it almost it makes it so that the person who owns the distribution doesn't necessarily have to necessarily understand, I guess the games industry itself. But I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what will happen in the next 3 to 5 years. Are we going to have? Because you're going to these indie meetings, so I'm trying to get a gauge of what you feel is going to happen with indie games and indie success.
I think
especially because of the indies gaining a lot of success, I think gaming is, at least for the time being, getting to be smaller and more prevalent. Like, you'll play a little game while waiting for a bus. You might play a different game on a DS while you're riding the bus. Maybe you get home, play something on your PC. It's not like before where you'd buy one $60 game, play it for like a month, and go buy another.
Okay. And plus the audience is opening up. I mean, sure, there were people were interested in games, but even the business models didn't allow for a lot of people to try out games. Whereas now, because literally people can just try a game for free, it makes it more accessible, it seems, to a lot of people.
Definitely. Which, people already have the hardware. They don't have to spend $500 on that.
Yeah.
And they can get it, like, while they're waiting for that bus, they could get a new game just by going to their app store and having it presented to them.
What have been the top three lessons that you feel that you've experienced or learned as you've gone on this indie journey?
Well, I know number one is definitely iterate. You know, you got to show your idea as early as possible to as many people as possible so that you can get it refined quickly. You don't want to come out with a game you think is great after 2 years, spend another 3 years actually making it good, because by then you're 5 years behind. Secondly, this is definitely just building off of what we've been talking about, you know, the multi-platform aspect of it. I would say that one of my biggest failings in the past 5 years was sticking so closely to Xbox as the other markets opened up. I think if I had jumped on those a little earlier, I'd be doing a little bit better right now. I don't know if I can come up with a third.
Sure.
Do you have any lessons, Jake?
Yeah.
I mean, my biggest lesson is always to, no matter how much planning you do, there's always more planning to do. And when you think the work is over, there's always more work to be done. And, like, even when you think the game is done, there's always one little thing to fix.
Yeah.
So, and everybody's not going to like your game, but it's getting as many people who are into your game to like the game.
And especially people who are into your game to like it more after you make changes.
And what suggestions do you have for indie game developers out there?
Definitely be receptive to anyone who plays your game and any feedback they give you. Even if you disagree with 100% of it, you've got to try and realize where they're coming from, why they're saying it. And even if you don't make the changes they're suggesting, what changes can you make to address the underlying issue? I would definitely say focus on your business model early. I think that's a huge problem in indie games right now, is people who want to make the game without thinking about how the game is going to support them in their life. I don't know, look at what else is out there. A lot of the best lessons I learned are just looking at other indie games and, like, new games coming on the market. It used to be a complaint that, you know, you start making games and then you don't have time to play them. Can't let that happen.
And cool. So thanks again for your time. For the audience out there, can you remind them where they can find your Kickstarter and the website they can visit to check out your games?
Yeah, we're on Kickstarter.com and we're Super Dwarf Madness. And you can get a link to that from our website, theunallied.com. theunallied.com.
Great. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Take care. Bye.
All right.